The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Monday, the 20th of July, 2020. On the podcast today, Andrew Lemonifides, Chief Executive Officer, and Christian Allen, Chief Financial Officer of Tungsten Corporation, T-U-N-G, sticker there, and the guys talk about their trading update and provide an outlook for the business. Plus, I also have Alan Green, CEO of Brandon Communications, talking about Power Metal Resources, Tertiary Minerals, Blenker Resources, and Venture Life Group. Plus, later, I'll also be covering two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. You can see top 10 versions of both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll also see lots of other articles, comments, blogs. There's one on Byzant Resources there. There's one on Tungsten Corporation blog post. There's a video there on Robert Ross from XPD. There's also a video on Cadence Minerals. And also check out our COVID-19 index. I've got the top riser today. In fact, I mentioned it with Alan Green on the podcast as well. Is Synergen up 552% there, and that's on positive test results of a trial of COVID-19 patients. And the biggest fall today on that list is React Group, and of course they do decontamination stuff. That's down 6.67% to 1.05 pence. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andrew Lemonifides, Chief Executive Officer, and Christian Allen, Chief Financial Officer of Tungsten Corporation. T-U-N-G is the ticker. Guys, thanks for joining me this morning.
Good morning.
Pleasure. Good morning.
Now, you've released a trading update, and we'll dig into that in a bit. Before we do, you've got me on the podcast before, so could you give a brief summary explaining what Tungsten Corporation is all about, please?
Sure, Justin. It's Andrew. I'm happy to do that. Tungsten is sort of a leading provider of, we say, global electronic invoicing and purchase order transactions. You know, what does that really mean? It means we provide a digital foundation that connects accounts payable buyers with their suppliers. And what they want to do is pass electronic invoices that flow through our system onto the buyer's system. The reason for doing that is you want to have a compliant invoice. It means when the invoice arrives with the buyer, it can be straight through processed. It means it processes quickly, efficiently, and essentially it means you get paid quicker. You also understand where your invoices are. If there are issues, we get them back on track. We also offer complementary solutions such as workflow and also trade finance. It's designed to build sort of a holistic solution for our customers. But the main buyers, benefit for buyers is all around reduced cost of processing of invoices and faster payments.
Yeah, excellent stuff. So, let me just ask a question before we get into your background there, Andrew. I mean, so this must be a very big market. Do you target a part of that market?
No, we don't. When you actually look at it, when you think about the opportunity here, you've got to have a fairly significant number of invoices going through your business for you to be able to really make the right levels of savings. So we tend to focus on the customers in sort of the top 6,000 corporates, but you know there's equal applicability across most sectors. It's really around how your current business works and where the opportunity for digitization exists. Got to remember that in the majority of our customers today, only 30% of their invoices, strangely, are electronic. There is still 70% which are paper and PDF. So there's a big opportunity to go after.
Yeah, absolutely. So you were quite new to the role, Andrew. You've been there for months, basically. And so tell us a bit about your background, if you could.
Well, it feels like a long time, but yes, I joined in September. So my background before that, I came originally from the IT industry. I came through IBM, Toshiba, and then Dell. Dell, I'd spent 12 years. I was a finance director and then operations and then strategy. The key thing with Dell is it's an amazing company. You learn, the one thing you learn very much is how to be very transactional and very action orientated. I then joined IWG, working with Mark Dixon. That was 7 years where I focused on strategy and essentially growing businesses. So combining the two brings me to Tungsten.
Yeah, absolutely. And so the trading update today, but take us through some of the highlights if you could.
Sure, Justin. Well, I'd like to actually introduce Chris Allen, who is the CFO. Chris, maybe you want to say a couple of words about yourself and then over to you on the trading update.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Andrew. So yeah, just a bit of background on myself quickly. So I joined Tungsten in the last week of April from Worldpay, the world's largest payments processing business. Where I was CFO of the UK and Irish business. Before that, I cut my teeth in media, spending many years with Sky and also time at Amazon. So a media background, but I think I've joined Tungsten because there is a massive opportunity ahead of us, and it's an exciting time, I think, to be part of this sector. So quickly, in terms of the trading update today, we've announced group revenue of 36.8 million, which is up 2% on the prior year. Now, this number contains £500,000 of revenue from the network finance division we announced we would be winding down this year. So excluding this impact, the core network business grew revenue at 3% to 36.3 million. I think the most pleasing thing for me about this performance is we're seeing the percentage of revenue that's both recurring and repeatable increase, and it's gone up to 93% of total revenue from 92% last year. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, recurring revenue is mainly the annual subscription fees that we charge our large AP customers for setup and access to the network. And then the repeatable revenue is mainly the transaction fees that we receive from both those large AP customers and their suppliers whenever an invoice transaction is processed by us. I think this gives us and investors significant comfort over the forward visibility we have of business performance. The other thing I'm pleased about is cash. So after many years of cash burn, we ended the year with just over 3 million of net cash on the balance sheet and delivered positive cash flow of £400,000.
Excellent stuff. Yeah, that recurring revenue, that's excellent figure, 93%. Can I just ask you there, on that, are these long-term contracts? What's the deal there?
Yeah, so we do sign multi-year deals, probably on average 3-year deals with our large AP buyers, and we the business model is such that we charge them an annual subscription fee for access to the network, and then we get the transactional revenue as and when invoices get processed. So we're able to share in the upside as those companies grow, and also as we penetrate more of their invoicing volume. So it's great for us to be able to have the steadiness of the subscription, and then we get the growth opportunity from the transactional side.
Yeah, absolutely. And as with all companies these days, you have to sort of dedicate at least a paragraph to COVID-19, because it's affected everyone in the world. How's it affected the business, COVID-19?
Yeah, I'll take this one, Andrew. I think the business has weathered the what's basically been a global economic shutdown over the last 3 months pretty well, and I think has proved pretty resilient. I think from a business performance perspective, we've experienced a reduction in the transaction volumes we've processed on the network since April. I don't think that's particularly surprising. But following a trough in May, we have started to see those volumes recover following the lockdown restrictions being eased. And June was a hell of a lot better than it was in May. I think that's testament to two things, really. One is our strong blue chip client base, and the other is the diversified sector coverage that we have. So we're not too dependent on any one particular customer in any one particular sector and any one particular area of the world. I think also, though, from a people perspective, We've been delighted how well our people have reacted and also adapted to the new environment. You know, we've transitioned pretty seamlessly to working from home culture. And what's interesting for us is that we've not seen any reduction at all in productivity. So, you know, I think we ourselves feel that we're pretty well placed now that it feels like we're coming out the other side to take advantage of the, you know, of the, any long-term opportunities that will present themselves following a return to a degree of normality.
Yeah, okay.
And Justin, it's probably worth saying that for our clients, you know, we believe that COVID has actually provided a bit of a wake-up call because I think the global lockdowns have sort of forced the closure of many operations that were receiving, remember what I said, paper and PDF. Mm-hmm. That's impacted their ability to actually pay at a time when, you know, maintaining supply chains and cash flow were absolutely critical. So I think the whole COVID experience has sort of underlined the importance of cash flow, payment cycle, managing the supply chains. And in the future, I think what that means is it will accelerate, I think, the digitization of invoices going forward.
Yeah, I think it's transformed a lot of businesses and for the positive. And so we've discussed sort of financial highlights there. Let's talk about operationally milestones you've achieved in this year. What's your thoughts there?
Well, I think there, what Chris said, you know, the new sales billings going up 35% in our second half really underlines the changes we've made internally, particularly around our sales team. But I think three other things to call out. Firstly, in July, you know, we're concluding our largest ever single partnership agreement with a leading US bank. Why is it important? Well, it has the capability to deliver around 2.5 million invoices from 28 new buyers onto our network. And remembering what we're looking to achieve here is network effect. So that makes a huge difference. It will release up to a further 40,000 new AP suppliers onto the platform. Mm-hmm. Also, in April, we concluded a successful sort of technical integration with Coupa Software. We are now a fully certified Coupa Link partner. And also, you know, our exclusive sort of supply chain finance partnership with Albion, that has become revenue generating. We've got an agreement with a major UK retailer who is offering that product out to their supplier base. And given we launched it in March, you know, that's been highly successful. So it's been a very exciting sort of second half, and it gives us very good momentum going into our new financial year.
Yeah. Okay. So let's look forward. If we did, I mean, you know, COVID-19 has told us you can't predict anything these days. But going forward, there, what's your thoughts next, say, 6 to 12 months? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think you stole my thunder there, because I was going to say you can't predict anything with any great certainty at the minute. But you know, I've touched on in the short term. I've touched on the fact that we've seen a bit of a reduction in our in the volumes we've processed on the network, but we have seen run rates begin to recover. So we expect those to recover over the second quarter of our financial year, which runs until the end of October. And then we expect by the beginning of November, normal levels will be resumed on that front. So we think should that play out, we remain comfortable with market expectations for the current financial year. I think it's also worth emphasising we've traded profitably in the first 2 months of the new year, and we are managing cash flow carefully. We drew down another million of our RCF in March, but this is unutilised. So we feel that we're entering whatever uncertainty may arise. We feel we're entering it in a resilient and in a well-capitalised fashion. I think over the longer term, it's something that we've touched on earlier in this podcast, over the longer term, we see COVID benefiting our opportunity to accelerate the digitization of, you know, AP and AR departments in these big multinational businesses, where, you know, we think that with the onset of more flexible working requirements, where there is, you know, the desire for companies to move away from having lots of people focused in one particular office doing a lot of processing work, there's a real opportunity here for us to get into the message, you know, to get into these buyers and to give them the message that accelerating the digitization of their invoice processing is going to be extremely important for them. So, you know, we think that there's a good long term opportunity ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, guys. One final thing here, or three final things. If someone's listening right now, likes the sound of what you're doing, the progress you're making, but are not yet following the story, could you give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please?
Justin, well, hopefully what we've outlined is the what's exciting, I think, for Tungsten is that untapped opportunity within the existing clients and our focus on attracting new ones. So for me, the reason you should be hitting that button, so three reasons. I think we have an international sort of blue chip client base that includes people like GSK, Unilever, P&G. We've got that significant recurring revenue with strong future visibility. And finally, our platform is fully invested and it presents a significant scaling opportunity in the market.
Excellent stuff, guys. Good to chat to you and hopefully we'll catch up in the not too distant future. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, then.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communication. Sure, Al.
Very good morning, Just. I hope your camping weekend went well.
No. I don't. When I go on holidays, right, I want to upgrade for a couple of weeks or a week, whatever I go for. I don't want to downgrade. I don't want to pay for the privilege of living on the floor. You know, yeah, I mean, yeah. Do you remember we see this picture sometimes? And I feel really sorry for these people who are trying to get into Britain. They travelled from like Afghanistan or Africa and they're in tents, you know, cooking off the floor, all that stuff. Yeah, they're trying to escape that lifestyle. There's me paying to do that. I don't need to even share toilets with someone. I've got a toilet in my house. Just me and my family share. You know, I have a stove we stand at. I have a settee, not a fold away chair. And I don't have to spend sort of 40 minutes boiling water to make a cup of coffee. I got an instant hot tap in our house. Well, why am I paying for the privilege to live like a refugee? I don't understand that.
Well, the thing is, I did that years ago, air training corps, you know, marching across Dartmoor in the freezing cold and camping and, you know, just survival, all the rest of it. Yeah, I get it in that context. But, I mean, we had a mobile home in the south of France up to 2010. And we go down there, all your creature comforts there. You sit out on the deck outside and you'd cook a barbecue and you just drink wine all the time. It was fantastic. And that's my idea of camping. You know, if you're going to go away, you know, have a proper bed, you know, decent shower, all the creature comforts you want, and then you're kind of walking outside and you're in this beautiful pine forest. You know, that's camping. You know, not in the tent. I completely agree with you. But actually,
as you see people taking their washing down to the thing, there's a washing. I did it as well, and you think I've got a dishwasher at home. What am I doing here? Why am I even just scrabbling on the floor and cooking? Oh, I mean, the kids absolutely love it. They're on their bikes. It's a lovely place, actually, but the kids love it because they're with the bikes and they're playing with other kids non-stop. Like, you know, as from the sunrise, sunset, they're playing, you know, so they love it. But if I didn't have kids, I can't understand. I saw some people there without kids camping. Why are you putting yourself through this? You know, live up a bit. Don't live down. Oh, I don't understand it. Really don't.
I know, mate. It's hard work. I enjoy camping years ago, but not now. You know, if I go away, stay somewhere, you know, I want a nice bed, I want a decent shower, and you know, good food and decent beer or decent wine. You know, that's it.
The trouble is, the downside is, it's like it's nice weather, but that's another thing. It's got to be nice weather. If it's not, it's even more miserable. If it's nice weather, a couple of hours before sunset where you start, you know, you get a few drinks and you fire the barbecue up, that's quite nice. But then I have quite a few drinks to just tolerate it. And then I wake up in the morning with a hangover, you know, and maybe rain come on the tent like I was. I'm thinking, why am I paying to do this? This is a punishment. I can't understand. So anyway, after a bad night's sleep on a bed that's going down, you know, just the air is coming out of it. Going, what the heck?
And then you wake up and the sun's blazing down on the tent.
Oh, yeah, it's either hot, too hot.
It's like pressure.
Yeah, it's either too hot or it's raining. So you're thinking, oh.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. I suppose it makes you appreciate your home comforts a bit more anyway. So there we go.
It does, yeah. Indeed.
Well, let's go to stocks. Oh, have you seen, by the way, stock of the day is called Synergen. And it's very annoying, really, because I have a guy called Vadim come on the podcast every now and again. He's head of healthcare. SP Angel. He's mentioned Synergen quite a lot and doing the clinical trials they're going through. And they're in Southampton, which I'm not far from Southampton. And my son's got a lung condition. He's been to Southampton quite a few times. They're based there. And I've often said I should invest in Synergen because they're going well there. But they've had some results out. And they said patients who received their SNGO1 has had a 79% lower risk of developing severe disease compared to placebo. This is for COVID-19. Patients who received it were twice as likely to recover from COVID-19 as those on placebo the first day. up 345%.
340%, yeah.
They were at 370, but it's one of those stocks where you think, I should have just put a little bit of money in there, and I didn't, you know, which is, Anyway, it's always, that's the love of stocks. You miss out on some, you win some, you lose them. You can lose them again.
I'm a hindsight millionaire many times over, Just. It's just one of those things, isn't it? You know, you make a decision, get out. You know, I sold Tiziana too early too. You know, I had some shares in Tiziana, sold them too early, and of course that's now sort of that's now touching £2 a share, which is you know, everyone expected it to do, and it has done. So there you go. But you know, there's an old saying: no one ever went broke taking a profit. So yeah, that's an important thing.
Okay, well, it did hit 370%. It's coming back a bit now, so people are trying to buy this. And I think, you know, what would be funny is if they said, it wouldn't be funny, but I mean, what you've got to be careful of is, because a lot of the companies at the moment, they're trying to make this vaccine almost like non-profit, aren't they? Because the world needs it so much. So if they release a statement, they're doing a statement at 12:30 today on TV. If they release a statement and said, oh, by the way, it'll all be non-profit, then the share price will collapse. But you never know, because that's what's happening at the moment. Just for the greater good, big companies are saying, we will make a profit on it. Well, we'll just supply it at cost. Yeah. Right, stocks, maybe any stocks out there, Al, that could be the next Synergen?
Well, I'm not looking into pharma stocks today. We've obviously discussed those in the past. Synergen, we've talked about Tiziana, Open Orphan, of course, still very much in the mix, and a raft of smaller companies too, which are all pushing. But today we've more of a mining theme, and then we're going to talk about a trading update from a self-care company. Now, of course, in recent weeks, I've discussed the big gold boom in Australia in the Victoria region, where we've already got many gold mines operating. That's the Fosterville gold mine, of course, where the Costerfield gold mine, the Ballarat mine, and basically a whole raft of exploration activities and license applications, including an application from Newmont Mining adjacent to ECR Minerals' Bayliston territory. I want to talk about Power Metal Resources, which has a joint venture with Red Rock Resources in the UK. Power Metal Resources, Epic Gold is POW. Shares are traded as high as 0.75p, which is roughly where they are now, and as low as 0.16p. Market cap of just 3.87 million. And this is a company with a raft of projects. I'd say the flagship project is most certainly its joint venture with Red Rock, which is called Red Rock Australasia. Power Metal Resources owns 49%, Red Rock owns 51%. And this comprises of 11 license applications covering over 1,800 square kilometres in the Ballarat area. And of course, the area is legendary for gold production. There are existing gold mines producing gold as we speak. So this is a very exciting development for the company, but also the fact that the license areas, as stated by the company, have extensive evidence of gold mineralization. And this was obviously, we can draw parallels with ECR Minerals with Bayliston and Creswick, where the Creswick revealed the nuggety gold mineralization, and you know, a high sort of recovery of grams per ton with similar numbers at Bayliston. So this is progressing as we speak, but there's a very interesting map on the Power Metal Resources website, which shows the actual acreage covered, as I said, over 1,800 square kilometres compared to the other companies operating in the area. And Red Rock Australasia covers a huge area in relation to both ECR and also Fosterville South and other operators in the region. So there is news that the company are working to develop these licences as quickly as possible, and there will be news out on those very soon. But again, this is just one element of the Power Metal Resources portfolio of companies. Secondly, we go to Botswana. The company has an agreement with Kavango Resources to acquire up to 51% of the Ditalcan project, which is basically rare earths. That will be for an investment of 150,000 neodymium praseodymium. And also in Botswana, it has an 80% stake in Kalahari Key Metals Exploration, which owns the Malopo Farms Complex project, which comprises of nickel, copper, and the platinum group metals. So again, there will be news on drilling from this from the Malopo Farms project within the next few months. Company has a stake in Cameroon, where its subsidiary Cobalt Blue Holdings holds 4 cobalt nickel licenses. In the Democratic Republic of Congo, it holds a 70% interest in Kasinka, the Kasinka Gold and Cobalt Project, which exists among many other cobalt and copper mines in the area. So again, it's in a producing area. In Tanzania, it has a 25% interest in the Haneti Nickel Lithium Project, and through that a 4.5% stake in Katora Gold. It's got an option to increase that interest to 35% by August 31st. And also there's progress with the Alamo Gold Project in the USA, which is 100% owned by Frisco Gold Corporation, and due diligence is ongoing there at the moment. So company is progressing well. The board consists of Paul Johnson, of course, well known through Metal Tiger and his many other companies that he's worked with and developed in the past. He's a well known sort of entrepreneur in the mining area. Andrew Bell, of course, the long-standing CEO of Red Rock Resources, and Ian McPherson, who's a mining expert of some repute, and Scott Brown, who has a banking background. The company raised $1 million in July, and this is to develop the licenses, so there's going to be a raft of news due very soon. Currently has a market cap of just $3.87 million, and those Australia licenses, the Victoria licenses alone, look what's happened to these metals gold price. That should tell you all you need to know. But very exciting year ahead for Power Metal Resources.
Yes, I'm not a buyer on that. I mean, it could do well. I'm not a big fan of small cap resource stocks anymore. Don't know why. Just boom and bust, isn't it? Really, that kind of thing. You know?
Well, that's a shame. I've got another two for you.
Oh no! Wow, after a long weekend, I can't take it. Go on then, what are they? Go on.
Okay, so we have tertiary minerals. Tertiary minerals.
What's happened now, then? Richard Clemmie's moved on, hasn't he?
Richard Clemmie stepped down. Great guy, Richard. He's moved on to Pastures New. And Patrick Cheatham, the chairman, also the chairman of Sunrise Resources, is now running the company until they bring a new CEO in place. But again, a raft of projects. The company has a 2 million market cap or less, and it has £700,000 in the bank. So
they've pretty much dumped their floor spar projects, haven't they, really, you know? They've sold like those.
Well, they still own them. They provided an update on the MB project in this morning's announcement. They said the metallurgical test program has now been completed, improved recoveries and grades, but failed to produce acid grade fluorspar concentrate. So it's produced metspar, which is obviously the lower grade fluorspar. But given the benign market for fluorspar at the moment, those are assets that sit there. Nonetheless, the company still has the agreement with the German commodity broker Possel, which has agreed to acquire 70% of any fluorspar project that's developed, or will acquire 70% of the product produced by the mine, any fluorspar mine that tertiary develops. So that's in place. If the fluorspar price changes, if there's a squeeze in demand, then who knows what can happen. But that's there as an asset. But the key thing I think that's come out of today, they provided an update on the Pyramid Gold Project. They've also got the 3 new projects, the Peg Leg Copper, Silver and Lead Project, the Mount Tobin Silver Prospect, and the Lucky Copper Project. But the key one today, the Paymaster Zinc Silver Project, and the exploration that's been undertaken has established that the zinc silver mineralization that is actually in the ground there is very similar to a large Taylor Z linked deposit,
Zinc lead. Oh, okay.
Zinc lead deposit, yeah. Zinc lead. Zinc lead silver deposit in Arizona, which is owned by South 32. And this is key because the South 32 declared a mineral resource estimate for the Taylor deposit back in May this year. 55 million tons, 2.5% zinc, 9% manganese, and 78 grams per ton silver, which is a pretty high number. So if the geological anomalies run across both projects, which are certainly indicative in the tertiary update, then that alone could be huge. But it's a raft of projects, a market cap of just 2 million and 700,000 in the bank. And I think given the upcoming and the increasing demand in precious metal, that's gold, of course, with the Pyramid project, silver with Paymaster and the other projects, we're going to see a lot more news and progress from the company in the next few months.
Lovely. Right. TYM, tertiary minerals there. Anything else?
Blancow Resources, updated today. Blancow Resources, of course, epicode is BRES. The shares relisted early this year at 6p, currently trading around the 7p mark. It's been as high as 9p. And they're en route to a maiden JORC resource estimate for the Orem Cross Graphite Project in Uganda, which is a huge, not only is it a huge project, one of the biggest graphite resources in Africa. 70% of the production there is expected to be for the top-notch stuff, which is the jumbo graphite flake, which is the stuff that's really in demand for battery production going forward. The other attraction is that this project is close to surface, it's got low mining and recovery costs, and it's they have a 21-year license for the project, which of course is based in Uganda, which is a very stable jurisdiction. Company announced today that they completed all of the drilling. They discovered several more high-grade zones that weren't in the original package, which is obviously great. Of course, a high-grade zone was identified less than 250 meters from the camp. The company will be providing the official JORC numbers during this quarter. So again, more news to come from that. A very exciting project, and again, this is going to be key for battery supply and battery production going forward.
Mm-hmm. Okay, lovely stuff. Yes, I've had the guys on, Mike Ralston, on the podcast a couple of times. Hopefully, we're going to update soon. But I do think it's quite exciting, that space, the graphite space, the car battery space, you know.
If you think about it, graphite makes up most of the car battery. That's the key thing here. You know, you've got have lithium and the other core commodities. But graphite is a huge component of batteries. So for these new gigafactories that are springing up all over the place, they'll need a source of supply. And this is probably about the best project in Africa to do that. So very exciting future ahead.
Okay. Cool. Anything else, Al?
I want to talk about Venture Life Group, which, as I look at this at present, the share price is currently up 17%. So they've had a great morning. They put out a trading update. Just a quick recap: Venture Life Group is known as self care. They develop, manufacture, distribute products for the self care market. A broker note put out by Cenkos earlier on this year said the company were just beating expectations on all fronts. There were concerns initially because they have a distribution facility in northern Italy, and of course the share price fell earlier on this year. But then, as the market realised that it was a distribution center and the products were just relayed out from there, the concerns sort of diminished. But not only that, the company has massively increased sales, and I mean the trading update today just really shows how far the company's come. Revenues are up 18% to 17 million. 65% of the growth has come from organic growth, 15% from the acquisitions they've made, and one of those acquisitions, PharmaSource, has grown revenues 43% already from last year. company signed 8 new partnerships during the period. They also, the flagship project, of course, is a 15-year agreement with a Chinese partner, which is worth $168 million. Just let that sink in, you know, given where the valuation of the company currently is. It's,
I thought you were giving that time to sink in then. Okay, go on.
Sorry, okay. And a pause to let it sink in. There we go. 8 new products, of course, during the period, including Disin Plus, which is an advanced hand sanitizer. Asda have already ordered 1 million units from Venture Life for that. Post end of the period, distribution in Spain for Proctoese. I dread to think what that might be, but got some idea. And also a distribution agreement in Israel for fungal nail products and a shoe spray. CEO Jerry Randall said today that the period in question was represented a real step change for the company and the business. And on the back of all the additional cash they generated, they're now exploring additional merger and acquisition opportunities, which they can basically pay for out of the cash they generated. And of course, they also have access to a considerable amount of debt finance facilities too. But I doubt very much they're going to need that, because the money they're generating from these new contracts is giving them quite a considerable war chest to go forward. And of course, they've got retail partners that not only include Asda, but Tesco, Morrison's Boots, Amazon, Alliance Pharma, they have an agreement with, and a raft of other distributors throughout the world. So this company is in a significant growth phase at the moment, and is also set for a great future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's done quite well since April, isn't it? It's gone, it's doubled from 30 odd, 36 pence to 85 pence. It's done quite well.
It really has. It really has. And I think it's because everyone saw the manufacturing or the distribution facility was in northern Italy. They naturally expected the worst, but because I think of the lockdown, they've just been able to, and of course the massive surge in people buying online, they've just been able to increase their sales and grow their product range. So they're in a very strong position to deliver exponential growth, both organically and also through acquisition as well.
Cool, marvelous stuff. Thanks for Al, and we'll speak to you next week. Hopefully I'll be a bit more, you know, lucid, a bit more with it. Just got a camping hangover, and just feel like my head's in a tent somewhere, you know.
Just you need to buy a motorhome. That's what you need.
No, I don't. I need to go on 5-star hotel holidays. That's it.
Yeah, but the thing is, if you're camping in a motorhome, then you are comfortable. Then you can cook inside. Then you can share.
Where am I going to put the motorhome? I don't want that big, massive thing hanging outside my house. Or what do you do with that?
Well, yeah, park it on the drive or park it down the road.
What I need to do is just fly to the airport, go to the lounge in the airport, which is nice food in the lounge, you know, pay for that, get a nice flight to a 5-star hotel, and then in the sun. Eat all the nice food I want. Came home, think that was nice. Rather than than going to camp, lying on the floor in a bed that's going down, and waking up either with heat and wasps and flies in your tent, and thinking, what the heck am I? I'm to trundle for 100 yards to share a toilet with somebody. No, I'm paying.
So you'd rather climb into a flying steel tube where everyone's germs all circulate around you, and you're crammed in there with people that, that's okay.
I would take my risk doing that rather than laying on the floor in a tent. Yeah, absolutely. I'd rather die in that way than die in a tent by eaten alive by insects. Absolutely.
By insects.
Marvellous. So on that note, now we'll speak next week. Cheers, fella.
Cheers, Jess. Speak next week.
Okay, it's time for the top 5 most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. Out 5, New Formix up 15%, 4.2 pence. At 4, Non-Standard Finance up 15% to 5.59. At 3, Landor Resources up 23% to 1.325. At 2, it's Omega Diagnostics, up 34.72% to 48.5. And at 1, of course, most followed is Synergen, up 552% to £2.38. Phenomenal rise there. Well done, holders. Okay, top 5 most liked RNSs are as follows. At 5, Pembridge Resources, Minto Operation Update for Q2. At 4, Trident Royalties, 67% increase in Kulianobin royalty payment. Nice name. At 3, Cobra Limited, initial asset results. At 2, Amiga Diagnostics. That's an investor presentation. And I won its Bazant Resources completion of due diligence on the HOPE project. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Much appreciated.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.